It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back to the Elise Glink Show, everybody. I'm Elise Glink, nationally syndicated real estate writer, expert, author, host of this show every Sunday, 11 to 1, here on News Talk WSB. Our number 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK, online, all the time. The website is thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. If you are not following me on Twitter, you are missing half the conversation. I have just kicked things off online. My Twitter handle is at, the little at sign, Glink, G-L-I-N-K, at Glink. And what I tweeted was, did the economy actually lose 1.2 million jobs last month, according to a Washington Post blog, which actually is looking at the Bureau of Labor Statistics figures for July. It looks like the U.S. economy actually lost 1.2 million jobs. Now, I will talk about that more in just a moment, but the overall point of whether we gained 163,000 jobs or we lost 1.2 million jobs, whether the stock market is up over 13,000 or lower than 13,000, whether gas prices are above $4 a gallon or below $4 a gallon, the message of the week is this. You have to stay on your financial path. You can't just go, wow, stock market back over 13,000, I'm going out on a spending spree. You just can't do that. It is absolutely nuts. Why? Because we don't know what's coming. I feel, and I, you know, the armchair economist that I am, I feel like that 13,000 stock market report is a bit of a bubble. Right? Why is the stock market going up? Because the rest of the world looks so awful. The European stock indices were down this week. Asia, Brazil. You look around the world, and where is everybody, you know, joyous about the economy? And the answer is nowhere. But they're a little less scared about the U.S. than anywhere else. We know that consumer sentiment is going down. We know that people are losing jobs. We know that the price of gas jumped 75 cents in a week thanks to an oil gas line rupture. I think it was in Wisconsin. We know that the drought has hit 63% of the U.S. corn crop, which is now considered to be pathetic. I mean, really, that's not the official term. That's my interpretation of the Department of Agriculture's official stance, which is that it's been severely limited. 63%. Now, poor shape. If you drive anywhere in the breadbasket of America, you realize how severe the problem is. And I say that, we had a huge thunderstorm go through last night in Chicago, and we got about an inch of rain. Great, that's good for this week. But unfortunately, the corn crop really needed it in July, and the corn is about as high as your an elephant's toenail. And it's really a problem. What does that mean? It means that we're going to have higher food prices in a couple of months. It means that we're going to have a meat shortage in this country. Why? Because farmers or ranchers are going to slaughter their cattle. They can't afford to buy corn to feed the cattle, so they're going to kill the cattle, which means temporarily you're going to get prices going down for meat. That's a good thing. Stock up, fill your freezer, because come Christmas, there could actually be a shortage of meat in this country and the prices could skyrocket. The country created supposedly about 163,000 jobs, but if you actually look a little bit deeper, like the Washington Post blog did, and I tweeted out that link, the reason that it looks like we went up with the number of jobs is simply because of what we call the annualized ebb and flow of jobs in this country. So typically, auto industry fires people in the summer or lays them off or furloughs them because demand goes down. So they have to adjust for that. In the winter around Christmas, retailers hire more people. So if you didn't kind of adjust for the ebb and flow of these things, you would never get some sort of an annualized number. And that's what the $163,000 jobs created number is. It's this guess. this best guess that we may have lost 163,000 fewer jobs than otherwise would have been expected. So, where are we going with the economy? Numbers don't look great. I hope I'm wrong, but every week I get on the show and I say to you, prepare for the worst. Hope for the best, prepare for the worst. But if you don't stay on your financial path and the worst happens, you're not going to be ready. You're going to be like this woman who emailed me this week who said she loves the show, but that she doesn't think I realize that most folks are just one paycheck away from total bankruptcy. She thinks I'm not giving enough advice on how you can stay out of bankruptcy court. You want to know how to stay out of bankruptcy court? Spend less than you have. Even if you get an unemployment check of $300 a week, spend less than that, or don't spend any more than that, which is really hard to do. I'm not saying it's not nearly impossible. I'm saying it's really hard to do that, especially when you end up paying an extra 15 or 20 bucks a week for a tank of gas because some pipe develops a leak in Wisconsin. That $15 to $20 a week, I know, is going to push a number of families over the edge. People who are listening now, if you're listening to me and $20 a week is going to send you to bankruptcy court, you should email me or tweet me @blink so that I can give you some specialized advice. You must do what you can to prepare for what could happen. And what could happen? I think we could see the stock market fall significantly. I think when the air comes out of that bubble, it's going to be really something to see. Very scary. Will it go all the way down to 6,700 again? I don't know. There was a long time. A couple of years ago, I thought it actually would. Maybe not. Maybe it'll go down to 9 or 10,000 again. Whatever happens to it depends a lot on how deep the recession gets in Europe and how slow or stopped the Chinese economy gets. We are slowing down in this country, and it's scary. And I know you're scared by it, and I know you're a little stuck. And I'm here to help. 404-872-0750. Let's see what we can do together. 14 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glink Show. Paul joins me on the line. Paul from Lawrenceville, what's your question?
Right now, Elyse, I am 45% underwater on my home value.
Wow.
And there's a company that has agreed to buy it on a short sale and negotiate with the mortgage company if I give them an application fee of $299. And I want to know if that's a legitimate type thing or what.
What is the name of the company?
It's the American Equity Foundation. It's based out of California. And it's a group of investors who have said that they would buy the home and allow me to rent it for 2 years if I decide to buy it back from them, but that they would negotiate the deal for me from my current mortgage company.
So it turns out that American Equity Foundation is actually a company I know. And I know them because of eCredible. So you've heard on the show, we've had Steve Ely, who's the president and CEO of eCredible. You've heard him come on the show a number of times. And what his company does is he helps people who have horrible credit or no credit start to develop credit so that they can do better with auto loans and get mortgages and things like that. Now, in this deal with American Equity Foundation, have they said that you will get to be enrolled for free in eCredible to help rebuild your credit score?
Well, the credit score is not the issue. The payment's not the issue. The issue is I want to get out of the home and get it out of my name on a short sale and just get rid of it and move on.
Okay. Well, have you tried to do that on your own?
I talked to the mortgage company, and they're not willing to negotiate it at all.
Isn't that great? So you said, I want to do a short sale, and they said no?
That's what they said. They said no. But these people are telling me that they can do it for me.
Well, I think they probably can do it for you. So the way that American Equity Foundation works is the guy who runs it has made a ton of money in the internet company about 10 years ago. And he's come back into the real estate market. He's raised some money. And what he's looking to do is buy 30,000 or 36,000 homes this year.
That's what they told me.
And basically, you'd get to stay in your house and rent it, and then you could buy it back from them. But in the meantime, they negotiate the short sale for you, the house comes out of your name, and you know, there's you get this, you get a free subscription to eCredible to rebuild your credit. Not your issue, I understand, but for a lot of people that is a consideration, because doing a short sale will impact your credit history. And then they're going to take a hit on, they're bringing down the amount, right? With the short sale, they're going to negotiate to buy that house from you at a significantly reduced price. And then the idea is that you would buy it back from them in a couple of years at a significantly reduced amount. So it would wipe out that negative equity.
The 97% deal is what they're telling me.
97% of the amount that you, they're buying it from the bank or buying it from you?
That's the price I would have to pay them if I wanted to buy it back after 2 years.
97% of what they're going to pay.
That's correct.
Yeah, that sounds right. They are a legitimate company. I just happen to know this one. Through the association with eCredible. I haven't met the guy who runs it. I do know what the model is, and there are models like this with hedge funds and private equity all over the country, a lot of them based in California.
Right.
And they're all now looking to buy 30, 40, 50,000 houses a year to sop up this glut that's on the market, and people who, like you, who might well decide to just throw up your hands. The bank won't negotiate a short sale with you, but they will with these guys.
Right. That's what he told me.
I know. It's crazy. It makes no sense to me why the bank wouldn't just negotiate with you and be done with it, because you're at 45% negative equity. You're much more likely to walk away from that house. And then it goes into foreclosure, which means that instead of getting whatever price they're going to get like 20 cents on the dollar. So the answer to your question is these guys are legitimate. And if you want to get out of the house and they can help you and it's going to cost you $299 and you feel like you want to pay that, I think that's fine. Be careful of this thing, though. You must get the bank to discharge forever the deficiency.
That's what he said that they would do. He said they will discharge the deficiency and it will not affect my credit and they'll let me walk away before December 31st of this year.
Great. I think that's great for you. It will affect your credit, though. I don't know how they can say it won't affect your credit. It will affect your credit because there's going to be a deficiency. Now, you just want to make sure the deficiency is discharged fully. That's your job. Make sure when you see the paperwork that that's what the paperwork says. And if you don't understand it, have them explain it to you. Have them tell you exactly where the paragraph is that says this is the deficiency and it's been discharged. And as long as you do that, that alone is worth the price of $299.
Thank you so much.
Let me know how it goes, Paul. Promise?
I promise to get back to you the moment it's done.
Wonderful. Good luck. All the best. 19 minutes past the hour on the Elyse Glenn Show. Our number, 404-872-0750. We are talking about staying on your financial path. Paul has discovered his path this morning. He feels like he's been unstuck. He's 45% negative equity. This company's going to step in and help him, and he now knows what he has to do in order to get to a place where he's going to feel secure. I just hope everybody else gets that same good fortune. 404-872-0750, 1120. I'll be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
1125 on News Talk WSB. I'm Elyse Glenn. For those of you who just tweeted, E-C-R-E-D-A-B-L-E, eCredible.com. If you want to join to build your credit, use the code GLINK, my last name, G-L-I-N-K, for a discount. All right, let's take a quick call. Mike joins us on the line from Dallas. So, Mike, you're wondering about the ethics of a short sale?
Well, yes, ma'am, because the way I understood it, this last fellow that called earlier, he's kind of in the same boat I am. I'm making my payments. You know, I signed the note. I agreed to pay so much. I'm making my payments. But right now, if I sold it, I'd take a whooping because the value is not real great. So, you know, I've got negative equity. I just don't see how that obligates the bank to take a hit for me.
Well, did you actually read the document you signed, the mortgage document? Because
okay, I read that whole thing.
Oh, you know me. I'm gonna scold you for that, Mike. But let me tell you what it actually says. Your document says that you agreed to pay if they give you a loan. Your document also says if you don't pay, they get to take your house.
Right.
That is the deal you struck. It is a business transaction.
Right.
So when you talk about ethics, people decide for business reasons not to make payments all the time. In fact, the Mortgage Bankers Association stopped making payments on their $450 million headquarter building in Washington, D.C. Mortgage Bankers did a short sale. Actually, they didn't. They just did a foreclosure and they turned it back to the bank. So the real question is, why do you think it's okay for businesses to make business decisions, but not people to make good business decisions? And in no way am I advocating this, but this is not an ethical question. Your business terms are spelled out in the document that you signed that I sure wish you had read, but you can go back and read it now and see what it says. And nowhere does it say that if you stop making your payments, you're a bad person. It just says if you stop making your payments, the bank gets the house back. So if we take ethics out of the discussion and you start just looking at what is going to keep you on your financial path and what's the best choice for your finances, you may come to the conclusion you should keep making your payments or you may decide to do something else. 404-872-0750. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. Be back with more on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Hey, welcome back. It is 11:36 on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. This is the Elise Glink Show. We are live on Sundays, 11 to 1. Don't forget to sign up for my free weekly newsletter at thinkglink.com. Lots going on in the ThinkGlink community. We would love for you to share. You can also follow me on Twitter. That's where we handle a lot of the conversations, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. You'll also want to take a look at the Equifax Finance blog for my latest musings on the real estate industry and at CBSNews.com as well. So we've been talking today about how to stay on your financial path. And I think the easiest way to help people understand this is to equate it to diets, right? So when I talk about staying on your financial path, it's a little bit like staying on your diet, right? So everybody breaks their diet, you know, now and again. I personally, there's a place in town that makes the best fried chicken. And if you are a long time and very careful listener to this show, you know that I love fried chicken more than almost anything else. I don't know why. I just do. I mean, from the time I was little and our housekeeper would sometimes make it for us and it was like my favorite thing to eat. And so sometimes I go and I order fried chicken. I know that as a 48-year-old woman who does not exercise nearly enough as I should or as much as I should, fried chicken is not exactly the thing that I should be eating all the time. But once in a while, I can't help myself, and I buy an order of fried chicken for about $6. On your financial path, there are going to be times when you just have to step off and buy some fried chicken or whatever the equivalent of your financial life is. And I understand this. I mean, it's perfectly normal. When we're under so much stress to watch every single penny and every single cent, just like you watch every single calorie and every single pound, there are temptations that abound all over the place and opportunities to do more and, you know, birthday gifts and trips you want to take and even just something as small as buying a cup of gourmet coffee. One cup of gourmet coffee at $4.50 a piece is not going to kill you. It's the daily habit of a $4.50 spend that could derail your financial path. Just like other things come into play, like gas prices going up 75 cents a gallon in a week, comes in and that can derail your financial path. Now, you can't do anything about gas unless you can have the ability to stop driving. And maybe you do, and that would be great. But if you don't, you're going to have to make sacrifices in other areas of your life to afford that 75 cent a gallon increase, because it's not a small thing. If it's 10 gallons a week, it's $7.50. If it's 20 gallons a week, it's $15. If you need two tanks of gas because you're like some folks in Atlanta who are driving, I don't know, 60, 70 miles each way to get to the office, you know, that starts to add up. And it's easy for your financial path to derail. And so when I say to you, focus on your financial path, I think about it in terms of, you know, the counting calories and the food. It's so irritating. But the easiest thing for me to do if I'm eating too much is simply write down everything I'm eating. And I've advised this to you for years. It works. Get a notebook. Start writing down every cent you spent. The gas, the coffee, papers, magazines. I bought a book in the airport the other day. Whatever the cost of whatever it is you're buying, write it down. First of all, it's such a pain in the neck to have to do that, that if you commit to it, you're going to stop spending money simply because you don't have to write it down. At the end of the day, at the end of the week, at the end of the month, add up what you're spending. You will quickly see places in your money diet that you can cut back, and it will keep you on your financial path. You can even do stuff that I think is psychologically helpful, which is to get a big change jar. And every time you save money over the weeks, you cut something else out, take that equivalent and stick it in the change jar. If you want to feel really good about what you're saving, just take a look at that change jar every day. And it will start to go up and up. Throw all the change from your pockets in there. Throw a couple of bucks in there. Week by week, you're going to end up with a few hundred bucks. It'll just accumulate naturally. That's how you stay on your financial path. Me, I'm going back to eating salads, giving up the chicken. I haven't given up on Bikini Body for the end of the summer season. But for you, staying on the financial path is going to reap huge results for you in a very short period of time. 404-872-0750. Jody joins us on the line from Lawrenceville. So, Jody, you've become a reluctant landlord?
Yes. I got married 3 years ago in summer 2009, and we built a home in 2008, and we both had houses. My husband was able to sell his house, and then he moved into the house that we built. And while we were waiting to get married, I was not able to put mine on the market yet. So in 2009, I put it on the market, and, of course, everything crashed. So we paid two mortgages for a year, and then with it on the market, and it didn't sell. So we finally got a renter in there, and I'm making it, but the house is, according to my latest appraisal, underwater, because unfortunately I put $10,000 in a home equity line to fix up the house like my realtor told me to do. So my question is, there are a lot of things right now about refinancing to get your interest rate down, but it's usually only for your primary residence.
Yeah, it's very hard to refinance a second home. You should have refinanced in 2009 before you rented it out.
Yeah, and I didn't know.
Gotta listen to the show. All right, so what is your interest rate now? Because actually it may be close to what is okay.
It's not horrible. It's like 5.5%.
You know what? You wouldn't do much better than that refinancing of a rental property anyway.
Really?
Yep.
Okay.
So that's out. What else can you do? You're making it. Is this something, can you sell the house now? Do you want to just, are you going to just wait? How far underwater are you?
That's what I don't really know, because the appraisal was like a county tax appraisal.
Oh, that doesn't count.
Yeah. And so I guess if I can get it appraised, who would do a good job appraising it?
Need an appraisal. You don't need to pay $400 for an appraisal. You need to call back a couple of different realtors, including the one who sold you that house.
Okay.
And say, I'm thinking about selling. How much is the house worth? Show me what other houses similar to this one have sold for.
Okay.
And that's called a comparative marketing analysis, a CMA. And you need them to come in and help you because you're kind of stuck right now.
Yeah, and I don't need the house. I don't really care to be a landlord, but I need to at least break even. I have a.
Let me stop you right there, Jody.
Yeah.
You may need to break even, but that may not be in the realm of possibility. So you may have to just let that go. If you are underwater, you could wait 20 years for this house to come back. Are you prepared to do that?
Not 20, no.
Because you're never. Well, are you prepared to wait 10 years?
Well, I've got a daughter in college, and I'm co-signing loans and things, so I want to keep my credit in really good shape for at least a couple more years. Then if I have to take a hit, it won't affect anybody else in my family as much, I guess.
Okay, so the question really is, what are you going to do for the next couple of years? So if you don't want to do anything with this house, like do a short sale, and you're not willing to cough up the cash, or maybe you don't have it, to be even, just in case you think you're underwater, and maybe you are, then you're going to have to keep this house for a while until you're done co-signing loans, and you figure out what are, you know, what other credit needs you have, and then you can do something. But you have to disabuse yourself of this idea that you need to get a certain amount of money. I mean, you do, but you're just not going to.
I made that up a while back.
Right. So the mistakes that you made, you know, you both should have sold your houses and moved into a rental. It would have been a pain in the neck, but, you know, by 2009, you could have seen that the market had crashed.
Yeah.
So you have to always look, get your head out of the sand, and actually look at the world the way it really is, not the way we want it to be. So the way the world, the way your world is right now, is you have to step out onto the front stoop of this rental property, and you have to figure out how many foreclosures are actually in the neighborhood. If there are 20 foreclosures that you can see virtually from, you know, within a half a mile or within a two-block radius, you're going to have trouble selling that house for anything. Now, you can wait 2 to 3 years and see what happens, but, you know, in a short sale, if you go and sell that property and you don't come with cash to the closing, after December 31st of this year, the IRS is now going to consider that income to you with a short sale, the deficiency, so the difference between what you owe and what you sell it for. The IRS is going to say that's like income to you, and now on top of losing all that money and destroying your credit, you're going to owe taxes.
So if you want to do a short sale, you need to do it before December 31st.
You got that message.
Okay.
Now, maybe you don't want to do the short sale because of all the other stuff, but if you're $100,000 underwater, I'm making up that number, I don't know if you are, the IRS is going to consider that you have now earned an extra $100,000. And they're going to say, wow, on top of your income, that is going to push you maybe into a much higher tax bracket. So you're going to owe them like 35 or 36% on that money. So you're going to have a tax bill of $36,000 plus state taxes on money you didn't earn. That's a huge loss for you.
Yeah, I understand.
Okay. So that's what I want you to think about and try and figure out what's going to be the best situation. So start with the comparative marketing analyses. Have the agents, two or three or four agents from different firms, come in, tour the house, tell you what they think it's worth based on everything else that's selling in the neighborhood. And then from there, you're going to have to make a pretty tough decision.
All right. Well, I appreciate your help.
You are very welcome. Thanks for listening to the show. Let me know what happens. 47 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Carl joins us on the line. Carl, you have a question about mediation?
Yes. To make a long story short, I had Aurora as my initial mortgage company, and then they transferred it to Nations Bank Mortgage. So the bottom line is, I was trying to get a modification done with Aurora while I was with them for like a year and a half. They had me on a payment plan, blah, blah, blah. Well, it never materialized. Well, I wound up switching my loan to this new bank, and now I have to start that loan modification process all over again. But in the meantime, a sale date popped up. When I was with Aurora, there was no sale date, but then as soon as they switched my, coincidentally transferred my loan from one bank to the other, as of the beginning of July, they told me I had a sale date of August 17th. So my question to you is, I applied to get a mediation, meaning in the state of Maryland, you have to go in front of a judge with the bank and yourself to see if you can work out something before the sale date goes through. But I just want to double check and make sure that a mediation will stop this August 17th sale date.
I wish I could tell you for sure. I think it does. I'm not familiar enough with the mediation process, the legal ramifications.
Right.
But anytime you...
I think you will have to, because I got a response back from the court that the mediation is supposed to take place September 12th. Well, I faxed the papers to the lawyers for the bank, and I let them know that, yeah, I have a sale date of August 17th, but this court paper says that the mediation is supposed to take place on September 12th.
Did you hear back from them? That's the right thing to do. Did you hear back?
I just sent the papers to the law firm, you know, that's affiliated with the bank. So I haven't, obviously, I haven't gotten any response back yet.
Okay.
But I'm assuming...
Don't assume anything.
Anyway,
Carl, don't assume anything. Assuming means that fax machines work. Assuming means that people are rational. Assuming means that companies do what they're supposed to do and they don't screw up. All of that could not be true. What I want you to do is take action. So, faxing is a good idea, but call back to the court and ask them this question and say, can I be certain that they will not sell my house before the mediation date? And what do I need to do to enforce that? The court is the one that sent you the documents. The court is going to be the one that is going to help you decide or help you understand what the process is and what it does. And if it doesn't stop the sale date, then there's something really wrong with mediation, because the way that it typically works is any legal action, you could get a stay of foreclosure. That's something you could do on your own. That would force it to stop. A bankruptcy filing, other kinds of foreclosure processes, that all stops, an actual sale date. It's supposed to anyway. It doesn't always work, though, and that's why I don't want you to take anything for granted. If you have some sort of legal document from the court in your hands, it should stop a foreclosure, but it may not, and that's why you always have to take action so that you know you're being proactive and you're protected. 11:50 past the hour. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back with more News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
It's 11:55 here on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. Thanks for joining me this Sunday. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. If you would like WSB to pay for the call, 1-800-WSB-TALK. Online all the time. The website, thinkglink.com, thinkglink.com. Don't forget to join me on Twitter. If you don't, you're missing half the conversation. My Twitter handle, @Glink, @GLINK, where I tweet out phone numbers and all the other kinds of things you need. @Glink, @GLINK. All right, let's go back to the phones. Ken joins us on the line from Covington. Hey, Ken, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Ms. Glink.
So you and your brother inherited your mom's home?
Yeah.
Okay, tell me a little bit about what happened.
No, she passed away, and we inherited the house. We just recently sold it.
And when did she pass, and when did you sell it?
She passed in September of 2009.
A long time ago.
Yeah.
Okay, and you just were able to sell.
Right.
Okay, and the question is?
Is that money considered inheritance?
Yes. Well, I guess the question is who inherited the house. It's part of the estate.
Yeah, well, my brother and I owned half the house.
Okay, so when you sold it, it was part of the inheritance. The question is, was it worth more than the price at which you inherited it? So did you get a price point on the house when she died?
It was valued at $300,000.
And what did you sell it for?
$193,000.
So you don't have a profit on the house, right? You sold it for less than you inherited it at.
Right.
So that money that you would split after expenses should not be taxed.
Okay.
So that's the good news.
Okay.
What other question did you have?
Oh, that's it.
All right. So good for you. You guys should split that up, and then you should do something positive and proactive with that money, because that money was your mother's, and it comes down to you, and now you want to do right by the inheritance. So what are your plans for the money?
Try to invest it.
Okay. Are you interested in being a landlord? Because there's a lot of houses for sale.
No.
Had enough with that.
Yeah, okay. I don't want that headache.
Whatever you choose to do with this money, Ken, I think it's really important that you choose to be accountable for it and proactive with it, right? You want to be responsible, accountable, and proactive. This is money you're inheriting, and you always want to, in my mind, do something a little bit more elevated with it, thoughtful and careful. And your financial path just got a near $100,000 boost because of this money that your mother left to you. So do right by her and spend the time that you need to spend to find the right investment for it. 404-872-0750 is our number here at the station. I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned to AM 750, now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
It's live, expert money and real estate advice every Sunday. Elise Glink is on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
It is 12:06 this Sunday afternoon on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink, a nationally syndicated real estate writer. Been hosting shows on WSB, filling in for Clark Howard, and then this show for the last 15 years. Delighted to join you today. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter. I'm at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. And if you're not online following me on Twitter, you're missing half the conversation. We've had some very good back and forth and a couple of good links as well, including my very first one this morning, my posting that the U.S. economy actually lost 1.2 million jobs in July. Good story from the Washington Post blog this morning. You can get that link on Twitter. Our number, 404-872-0750, 1-800-WSB-TALK. If I can help you with your money or real estate questions today, of course, we're happy to do it. We do that every day online at thinklink.com, thinkglink.com. When you're there, don't forget to sign up for the free weekly newsletter. That's your place to get access to all the content at ThinkLink. There's tons of it. Happy to have you join us. We've been talking today about getting your financial path online, making sure you stay with that path. I've talked about how your financial path is similar to a money diet, right? You think about food and calories and watching, counting your calories. Well, I want you to watch your pennies and count them as well. And I think that that is really the way to kind of get through these really stuck times. And before we get back to the phones, and I will in just a moment, and by the way, if you've been, every week I get letters from folks saying, I'm really trying to call in, but it's always busy, it's always busy. Well, there are three lines available right now. We just have Lanny waiting online from Fayetteville. Lanny, we'll get to you in just a moment. Everybody else is wide open, so 404-872-0750. If you're always wanting to call in, can't get through, now you can. But I wanted to spend a moment talking about this idea of personal responsibility. Came up last hour with the short sales and how, you know, we had a caller who said, look, I just don't think it's right. It's not ethical to do a short sale. And I want to be really clear. Nobody cares about your money or should care about your money as much as you do. Like, I care a lot about your money. But if I'm caring about it more than you, your priorities are in the wrong place. And I don't say this to say that everything in your life should just be money-focused. That's not really the point. But if you're in financial straits, if you're in tough times, if you're underwater, or if you're trying to save for a big event and you don't care about your money, if you don't think about how to manage it, you're going to wind up like millions of Americans who have nothing saved for retirement. You're going to wind up like millions of baby boomers who are hitting retirement and don't realize that they're going to have $250,000 in non-reimbursed medical expenses outside of what Medicare is going to do for you. Retiring costs money. Medical expenses cost money. Living costs money. Breathing costs money sometimes. I want you to be ready. I want you to be in a place where you feel safe and secure and where your family feels safe and secure. These are tumultuous times. What we have gone through in this country over the last 5 years economically has been nothing short of riding all the way up to the highest roller coaster you can possibly imagine and zooming all the way down. And if you feel a little sick to your stomach, you're not the only one. And the roller coaster isn't over yet. Even if we don't go as far down this time as we did the last time. I mean, this has been the worst recession in 80 years. What happened 80 years ago? That was the Great Depression. Housing is still in a Great Depression. Yes, we're starting to find the bottom. Yes, some people have been able to sell, which is great. But you know what's coming down the path in the next month or two? Three or four before the end of the year, a whole boatload of foreclosures. There are all kinds of people who can't afford their mortgages. We've heard from some of them today. We're going to hear from more of them, I'm sure, as the weeks go on. People are still losing jobs. People still are having trouble making their mortgage payments. And home prices, the more foreclosures go on the market, the more home prices are going to go down. So I hate to be a negative Nelly. And believe me, I've had people accuse me of being a negative Nelly. It's not that I'm trying to be a negative Nelly. What I'm trying to do is to prepare you for the worst. I want you to hope for the best, because I am nothing if not an optimist at heart. I want this country to succeed. I know over the long term, we will be better off 20 years from now than we are today. But today's really tough. And there are a lot of people hurting. And I get that better than anybody, because I hear from you every day. I get emails to thinklink.com. I get responses to the radio show. I talk to you on Twitter. You leave comments for me at the Equifax Finance blog or at CBS News or at Yahoo or wherever our content appears. I hear from you, and I know that you're hurting. And so week in and week out, what I'm trying to do is give you my very best guidance on how to get through these very tough times. Because it isn't easy. And it's scary. And all of these things that you've hoped for yourself along the way and for your family, to provide them with a better life, to do more for them than you had done for yourself, than your parents did for you. That drive that we have in this country, that manifest destiny to make it better for the next generation, that's in jeopardy right now. So many people I know are terrified that they're not going to be able to do that for their families. And that is a huge fear of failure. And we put so much stock in our ability to do that, to provide better for our children. It's like a mantra in this country, that the thought we may not be able to pull it off this time, wow, that's just mind-blowing. So week in and week out, I want you to hope for the best. I want you to prepare for the worst. I want you to be responsible, accountable, and proactive. I want you to take a step in any direction rather than keeping your head in the sand, because any step, even if it might be slightly not in the right direction, still gets you somewhere else where you aren't now. And that new place will offer new challenges, but also a feeling of momentum. And I believe momentum can build on itself, negatively and positively. If you're thoughtful about your money, you're going to build momentum in the right direction, and you're going to get where you want to go. I know, because it's how I lived my whole life. One step in front of another. And it's only when you look back over the years that you realize how many miles you've traveled. Day to day, it feels like you may not even be moving. Look week by week, or look month by month, year by year, and you realize that you're taking enormous steps in the right direction. And that's all I want for you. Big steps in the right direction. 404-872-0750. Let's go to the phones. Lanny joins us on the line from Fayetteville. So, Lanny, you've got a question about a second home?
Yes, I do. I own a second home. I've owned it for 10 years. It is not underwater. I'm not behind on the payments. My dilemma is I'm retired, and I'm ready to move on, and I know I can't sell the house for even what I paid for it. It is up for sale for about what I paid for it 10 years ago. And my question is, at what point do I decide that the 10 years of enjoyment that I've had is the profit or the breaking even that I would than a good market normally have for this place, and cut the price to a point that it would sell.
Do you have a mortgage on the house?
Yes, I do. As a matter of fact, I just refinanced it in March for a 3.75 interest rate. It is my only debt, $440 a month. I can pay for it.
Why don't you rent out the property for another 5 years? Why not? I mean, you 3.75%, you just refinanced, you went through the cost of it. I'd hate to see you waste that. That's a great interest rate. You probably could make some money on this place and wait for some movement in the area, assuming it's in a place where movement will come back.
Well, I thought about that. I'm kind of one of those show-me-the-money type people, and I would rather just, if it makes financial sense, I could do that. As you know, it's in the North Georgia Mountains.
Okay, well, you have to decide if you want to be a landlord. I will tell you that, you know, my husband Sam, who's a real estate lawyer, doesn't love being a landlord. He does it. He rents out the places. He gets them painted. We just went through the process of renting two of our properties. They both needed to be painted and fixed. They both came due at exactly the same time. Bad planning on our part, right? But we got them both rented for 2 more years. And we're hoping that the people who are going to be in it, one of them for 2 years, will actually renew for another 2 years on the other side. That would really help. But the point is that there is work that needs to go into it. But if you can't bear to take the loss and you don't want to come to the closing with a chunk of change, which is a retiree, I totally understand, right? You don't want to use up your finite resources that way.
Right.
Renting it, you probably make some money. Maybe $1,000, $2,000 a year. Property stays lived in, and you can ride out. You can afford to ride it out and see what happens in 3 or 4 years.
Right.
But if you don't want to do that, then you're going to have to make a hard decision, which is to find out exactly how far in the hole you are. And then you're going to have to decide to come forward with that amount of money, or you're going to have to walk away from this property and take a hit to your credit, which may not be a problem for you either. I'm just saying, if that's the choice you decide to make, doing a short sale or handing the property back to the bank, then you're going to want to make sure you've already figured out where you're going to live for the next 10 or 15 years, whether you're buying or renting. Get in that new place before you let this one go. Because once you let this one go, it's going to be really hard for you to get another mortgage for a while.
Well, I have another home that's paid for that I bought in February. I'm not going to short sell it. I'm not going to take money to the table. I could pay it off if I had to. That's not what I wanted to do. I owe 76 on it, and I paid 95 for it 10 years ago.
Okay.
I would prefer just to rent it other than that. But I'm not going to short sell it or lose.
Okay. So you've made a great decision, which is that the best option for you, since you don't feel like driving up to the mountains anymore and you're done with this place, you've had 10 great years there, which, by the way, that's why you bought it. You didn't buy it to make a lot of money. You bought it to love it. It sounds like you've loved it.
Oh, I have. It's just a wonderful place.
So somebody else will have the opportunity to love it, and you'll rent it, and maybe you'll charge them a little less than the going rent so they take better care of it.
Right.
And you'll have your choice of tenants. And that's how you do low-maintenance landlording.
Okay.
So why don't you try that and see how it goes? And it sounds to me like, you know, it's a really good decision all the way around, right? Because everybody, you get something you want, which is it rented out. You'll see what happens to the marketplace in a few more years. They're going to get a house that you've loved, that I'm sure they'll love, and you're going to make a few bucks on it as a little bonus. I think it sounds like a great plan. 404-872-0750. We've got a prize pack to give away. We will do that next. Stay tuned to News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
It's 12:24, time for our weekly prize pack. The WSB McDonald's Weekend Prize Pack is worth $404 this week. It is great. It includes a pair of tickets to see Big Bad Voodoo Daddy in concert August 17th at Chastain Park Amphitheater, produced by ASO Presents. a four-pack of tickets to see the Titanic, the artifact exhibition at Atlantic Station, and a gift certificate for a full house plumbing inspection, courtesy of Superior Plumbing. All right, we're going to have the fifth caller get it, and be nice to Crystal. I think she's the one who's answering your calls. Here's the prize pack line number. This is the one you have to call, folks. 404-741-0750. 404-741-0750. Good luck. 25 minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Klink. Let's go back to the phones. Russ joins us on the line from Dawsonville. Russ, you've got a question about your Roth.
Yes, I do. Thanks for taking my call, Elise.
What's going on?
I work for an employer who their 401k, I've only worked for them for 2 years, but their 401k is with the same company that I have my Roth IRA with.
Yeah.
The Roth IRA is opened it 8 years ago, but they both have like the target date funds that, you know, the retirement at a certain date.
Yeah.
You pick when you think you're going to be 65, and they kind of allocate for you. My question is when I was looking through the prospectus for the both of them in this last quarter, I saw that a lot of the funds overlap. So that
classic mistake.
Yeah. So my question was, should I move my Roth to a different company so that I'm not, overly exposed by one company and their bundle of mutual funds?
All right, Russ, you get kudos for understanding that the duplication of investments is a bad thing. You get a negative for thinking it's going to shift if you move your Roth. That's not the answer. The answer is simply to choose different investments for your Roth IRA. You get to decide what's in your Roth.
Okay.
So let's say you're at Fidelity or Charles Schwab. There's like 12,000 mutual funds out there. You can pick any of the 12,000 to be invested in. And what's smart about this is just because you have a target date fund doesn't mean that target date fund is actually going to apply things in the right way. But even so, what I would do is with your Roth, divide it into three investments. A pot of it goes to an S&P 500, right?
Okay.
Or a total money market fund. The next one goes for an investment in an international stock fund. And the third one goes into some sort of total bond fund, like the PIMCO total bond fund.
Okay.
Those three investments will get you fully diversified. Yes, there will be overlaps with what you have because you're buying everything, right? But what you're doing is really protecting yourself because your Roth, you might have your Roth until the day you die.
Right.
So being invested in the market, in the total market, is really what you want to do. The sector funds will give you a little bit more specific hit that will change as you get older, hopefully if they're doing it right. But that's
okay.
Really the way you want to think about it.
Okay.
So my sense to you is you're doing exactly the right thing. And I love, by the way, that it's all at the same place. Because even
really?
If you're not
okay.
getting one, you're still getting two statements a month. At least it's in the same place. You ought to be able to set up an online account with that company where you can see everything in a dashboard.
Right.
And then you'll be able to make investment choices. I mean, honestly, with your Roth, if you wanted to, you could even buy individual stocks, although I don't really recommend individual stocks anymore. But the idea that you can manage everything from one dashboard has got to be a huge peace of mind for you. You're not going to lose money. I mean, by losing money, I don't mean you're not going to lose investment money. Your investments might go down in value, but you're not going to forget where your funds are and try to find missing paperwork over the years because your stuff's all in the same place. So that's going to work in your favor. Good luck. Let me know how it goes. It is 28 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. We'll come back with more in just a bit on News Talk WSB.
Find her expert advice anytime at thinkglink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
Well, 12:35 on News Talk WSB. I'm Elise Glink. So first a correction. We were just on the phone talking about investments that you would want to make with Russ. His 401k is in the same place as his Roth, and he was thinking of switching the Roth simply because he thought the funds overlapped. My point was, you don't actually have to do that. With the Roth, you can invest in anything, individual stocks, funds. I mean, there's 12,000 mutual funds out there. There are a lot of things you can do. But then I gave my rules, which I have to credit my friend Dan Solon for turning me on to, of the three mutual funds that you need, three types of mutual funds you need to be fully invested and diversified in the market. And I said it in slightly incorrectly, and so I have to credit Brian, who is following me on Twitter, who said, oh, you told him to put a third in money market funds. I didn't mean to do that. What I wanted to say, and what I really believe, is that to be fully invested, what you need to do is have your, there are three funds, and I'm not suggesting that this is equal distribution by any stretch of the imagination, but the three funds are a total stock fund, total market funds, right? So this is a fund that mirrors, it might have 5,000 companies in it. It mirrors what's happening with the total equity marketplace. Second fund is a total bond fund, total bond fund. And then the third one is an international equity fund. And it's not just one part of the international world. It's not just Chinese funds, and it's not Latin American funds. It's not Brazilian funds. It's total international funds, right? How do you divide that up? Well, it depends on your amount of risk. But the international funds should probably only be 10 to 15% of the total amount you're investing. The stock fund, the overall market fund, is usually somewhere around 40 to 60%, and then the rest is bond, total bond fund. And what you decide to do with that has to do with how much risk you're prepared to take. But I wanted to just be really clear, because the way it came out, Brian was listening carefully, thank you, Brian, the way it came out is it might have appeared that I was telling you to invest a third of your money in a money market fund, and I was not intending to do that. So just wanted to be really clear. If you follow us on Twitter, you'll see the conversation. Brian just tweeted me that he's 90% in money markets right now because, like me, he feels we're facing some very serious headwinds, and he's waiting for the election before deciding how to vote, invest his money. So if you want to follow me on Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K, join the online conversation while we have our radio conversation going. 404-872-0750. Let's go back to the phones. Dana joins us on the line. Hey, Dana. So you've got a question about owner financing?
Hey, yes. Hi, Lise. Thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I was helping a friend of mine put together a monthly budget, and in going over all her incoming and outgoing monies, I found a really kind of a convoluted situation, and I didn't even know how to advise her. Several years ago, they purchased a home out in the country from an elderly gentleman, and he owner financed it. They lived in it for a while, then had to move away, and they were paying the loan to him, and then they sold it to someone, and they owner financed it to those people while continuing to pay the first loan. And when she told me this, I thought, well, now that first loan is an unsecured loan, and that would have violated the due on sale clause. That she said, well, this is all kind of under the table, and we're paying on that, they're paying us, and they're in the process of about to apply for a mortgage and build a home, and I'm concerned that a data mining company is going to uncover all this, and it's going to end up blowing up in their face because I don't know the tax implications. Or
why did they do
that?
It all doesn't smell right. You are absolutely right.
Something feels wrong, and I don't know how to advise her. I think I kind of scared her because I was so alarmed at this. We just quit talking about the budget, and I want to help them, but I don't even know where to start.
Did she explain why they didn't just pay off the loan?
I think they didn't have the cash because when they owner financed it to these other people, they didn't have a chunk of cash. So it's just all been a, you know, maybe $500 a month payment, and everyone's getting paid in this little triangle.
It's just stupid. I mean, it's just stupid. These people should have gone and gotten a regular loan from a bank, and then they would have been able to pay off the loan. Okay. The only way to fix this is to go to the seller, the original seller, and say
He has died.
Who are they making payments to?
They're making a payment to his heir.
go to the air and say, you know what, we're in this wacky situation. Do you want to keep being the bank? And they might want to because they can't get interest like this anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So do you want to keep being the bank? Yes. Okay, we're going to hire a lawyer, and we're going to transfer everything over to these people, and they're going to start paying you directly. And that's the easy way of getting them out of the situation. So they're going to need to hire, they're going to have to make that call. Then they're going to have to hire a real estate lawyer because somebody will probably uncover this.
Isn't there some missing equity, though, if they do that?
Why? The house may be worth less than what they paid for it.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
So, I mean, if these people are willing to take it over, the question really is that they paid $100,000 for the house and they sold it for $60,000.
Mm-hmm.
Then, yeah, they're going to have to make up that $40,000.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's what they're trying to avoid, it's going to come back to haunt them one way or the other. You should stay out. You should advise them to do this and then help them find a real estate lawyer and then say, well, I'm here to hold your hand. I really care about you. You're my good friend. But you have to fix this now or you're going to have this haunt you the rest of your financial life.
Mm-hmm.
And if they don't like that answer, hey, your name isn't anywhere over it. You can just step back and go, I did my best. And sometimes people put their head in the sand,
mm-hmm.
and they don't want to look reality in the face. And the world is not about how we imagine it to be. It's the way it really is. So if they are that far removed from reality, you can be the best friend in the world, and they will just hate you for it.
Okay, great. That's some good advice. Thank you.
Let me know what happens. I'm really curious.
Yeah. Well, thanks.
All right, Dana. Good luck. 43 minutes past the hour, 404-872-0750. Eric joins us on the line from Johns Creek. So, Eric, you're having a Department of Revenue issue?
Yes, ma'am.
What's going on there?
It's kind of crazy. Now the bank is trying to foreclose on us because the Department of Revenue has put a lien on our property, which they recently have admitted in a letter saying they were at fault. It was a mistake. Well, over the past year and a half, while my wife was trying to get it off her credit, they wouldn't listen to her. And now they're finally admitting it, but we couldn't get anything remodified. We're losing our home. For our business, we haven't been able to get any credit for our business buying things like purchasing vehicles. We've got denied because the Department of Revenue put a false lien on her and our house and our credit.
Have they removed that?
No.
Okay. You're going to have to hire counsel to get this reversed.
Yeah, and they're getting ready to foreclose on my house on the courthouse steps.
Because of this?
Yeah, because they won't modify my loan.
Have you sent... Okay.
Yeah, because of this.
Okay. You can file in court for a stay of foreclosure, which will stop that. And you should do that. Then you need to figure out what you can do to get the Department of Revenue to reverse this. Now, I assume it's the Georgia Department of Revenue, right?
Yes, ma'am. They recently sent us a letter like 2 weeks ago admitting fault and that they were going to have it removed.
Okay. So... You,
but the damage has already been done.
I understand. That is a separate issue altogether that I don't know how you can get recompense for that. People make mistakes. Government entities make mistakes. I'm not even sure you can sue the government once they've agreed that they to fix this.
Right.
What you can do is put the do a stay of foreclosure and go back to your bank and say, see, we told you that we don't have a lien on the property. Can you help us?
Yeah,
and
it actually cost us a short sale also. We had a short sale that was committed and the buyer backed out because he found out at the last minute that he had to pay an additional $5,000 or $10,000 on the deal.
Because of the tax lien.
Yeah. Yep.
I'm so sorry. You've had a really horrible time of it. Horrible. Are you sleeping at night?
Occasionally I wake up early, but I get 5-6 hours sleep a night.
It's just, this must be devastating to you. Your business is at risk, your house is at risk, and all because the Georgia Department of Revenue made a mistake that took a year and a half to correct.
Yes, and we even have all the evidence and letters that my wife sent in a year ago, and they did nothing about it. And it was from a silly it was from a silly car transaction where they traded a car, and there was no sales tax on it because the trade was upside down. So they charged the sales tax. The Department of Revenue falsely charged the sales tax against our credit.
Have you reached out to the governor's Office of Consumer Affairs?
You know, that's funny you say that. My wife was just writing a letter.
Yeah, you should reach out. They have an ombudsman, and maybe you can get some help, faster help in getting this solved. And if you explain to them the terrible financial price you have paid for this mistake that they made that has not been fixed, maybe there'll be something else that they can do for you.
Okay.
It's you know, if you are listening, if the governor's Office of Consumer Affairs, if somebody from there is listening, you know, please watch out for, you know, tweet me online or send me an email to ThinkLink. Eric, you should do the same, and I will try to also help route you to the right place.
And what is that?
My website is thinklink.com, thinklink.com. And a shout-out to the Georgia Department of Revenue. You've almost sent this family into bankruptcy over a sloppy error that's taken a year and a half to fix in a place where nobody can afford a year and a half of errors. So shame on you, Department of Revenue.
And that you know, that's even after my house has lost $200,000 in value.
Well, that's just salt in the wound, right?
Yeah, right, and I'll eat that, but they won't even modify my loan for me.
Yeah,
which is crazy.
Well, go back to the bank. You've got some work to do to try and get some help now, and hopefully that you've got this letter that says we were at fault and we're so sorry and we're going to fix this. Hopefully that letter will help. Let me give you the phone number to call to try and get some more help. You can call 888-995-HOPE, 888-995-HOPE. And maybe what you need is a HARP refinance, which they're now doing for severely underwater homes, and not a loan modification, but I don't know. You're going to have to see what you qualify for, and hopefully you qualify for something.
Yeah, they already turned me down for HARP and HAMP and all the U.S. justice programs and blah blah blah.
Oh, Eric,
it's funny. I can still laugh about it, but you know,
it's not really very funny, though, is it?
No, it's not.
I'm so sorry.
Especially when it hampers your business, also. And we have a thriving childcare business.
Well, that's good news.
Yeah, that my wife and I have, and it's really growing right now, and we're enjoying that, so that's keeping us
sane. It's keeping you sane.
Keeping us sane, yes.
Oh, you know what? I hate hearing stories like this because there's so little that I can do other than to reconfirm that, you know, you've been completely screwed over for no reason and nothing that you've done. And I'm so sorry.
Well, I appreciate your support, and I appreciate your help, and I'll talk to my wife, and we'll call all these people and see if anybody can help us.
I sure hope so, Eric. Please let me know. Reach out at thinklink.com and remind me that we had this conversation today. So if and when I hear from somebody, either from the Georgia Department of Revenue or from the Governor's Office of Consumer Affairs, I can put you guys directly in touch. It's 49 minutes past the hour. Folks, this is a great reminder that the Governor's Office of Consumer Affairs does have somebody who can help apply more pressure. And, you know, especially when you're talking about another Georgia agency that's at fault, it really helps to have this kind of assistance. You can also call, if it's a tax issue that you have, you can go to the Georgia Association of Enrolled Agents, GAEA, number 4, GAEA.org. We have these guys on the air several times a year to talk about taxes for you, Bill Nemeth and Mary Brody and Chet Burgess. They are some of the leaders of that organization. Enrolled agents are licensed to represent taxpayers before the IRS. They also have deep knowledge and inner workings and contacts at the Georgia Department of Revenue. So you may be able to call on them to assist you in getting these things fixed so it doesn't take a year and a half and it helps more quickly. 50 minutes past the hour, I'm Elise Glink. Stay tuned. We'll be back in a moment with more on News Talk WSB.
Advice anytime at thinklink.com and find her live midday every Sunday on AM 750 and now 95.5 FM News Talk WSB.
55 minutes past the hour. minutes past the hour. I'm Elise Blank. Thanks for joining me today on News Talk WSB. Don't forget to be online with me. Twitter, at Glink, at G-L-I-N-K. But really, what I want you to do, what you need to do, is sign up for my free weekly newsletter. Because if you sign up for the free weekly newsletter, that will be your key to every single thing we do in the Think Glink community, whether it's the Equifax Finance blog, where things are really hopping there, or at Yahoo, or at Money Watch. Wherever we are, you will be with thinklink.com. So sign up for that free weekly newsletter. Let's do another call. Denise joins us on the line. So, Denise, you want to invest in real estate, huh?
Yes. Hi. I am planning on moving to a neighborhood that has more children that are my son's age, and it will cause me to end up with a total of 3 properties.
Okay.
So I'm wanting to know if it's a wise move or not.
Well, it depends. It might be a great move if you've got if you've got a way to rent out the other property so that it brings in more money than it costs you. That's a terrific move.
I have one rental property now, and then I currently live in the second one. And then up until like 2 weeks ago, I didn't owe anything on the second one.
What did you do?
I took a loan out to get money to buy the third one.
Okay.
And the way I can figure it, with the rent that I get from the second one, I should be able to pay the mortgage on the second and on the third.
That is fantastic.
Well, there'll be about a $300 difference, but to me, it's not a lot to worry about to me.
No, $300 a month for living is not very much. I think that works out just fine. What are you nervous about?
I guess because it sure was nice to lay down at night and know that I didn't owe anything on my home.
Well, yes.
And so it's just a big change, you know, and I'm going from having, you know, 2 properties to having 3 properties. I guess it's just the responsibility of it. And
there's a lot of response. Listen, Denise, money management takes time and it requires effort, but you're making great decisions. It feels like a big step, but you just told me $300 isn't very much to think about. So you've got to get over the hurdle of thinking that the psychological jump up to the third property when it's really only costing you $300 a month is a big deal. It's not a big deal. It's a big deal in that you've taken a positive step for your financial future. You are on the right financial path and you are doing a good thing for your child. I always believe making those moves it's so important for your children. So I'm here cheering you on because you've made a positive step in the right direction, and I know it's going to work out for you. So take a deep breath, sleep at night, and know that step by step, you're achieving your financial dreams. All right, everybody, the music's playing, and that means our time is up. I'll be back next week for another edition of the Elise Glink Show. And in the meantime, I will see you on Twitter. Have a great day, everybody.